Ugh, I love Jenny Kane. At this very moment, I'm feeling so comfy and cozy as I'm practically getting a hug from my Jenny Kane crop cashmere cocoon cardigan. I am enjoying this sweater so much that I've been living in it all spring long. And with Mother's Day just around the corner, this is a feeling you can gift all the well-deserving moms, moms-to-be, and mother figures in your life by giving them the gift of Jenny Kane. Along with bringing you this episode, Jenny Kane is a California brand through and through, and their staples make getting dressed so super easy. Think minimalist and effortless, but totally refined. Jenny Kane means luxurious cashmere sweaters, iconic accessories, elevated versions of your everyday basics, plus the most incredible home essentials. For a limited time, Birthful listeners get 15% off their first order. Go to jennykane.com and use the code BIRTHFUL15 to get 15% off and support the show. Jenny Kane is known for their quintessential sweaters, with their cotton collection providing you with the perfect everyday pieces as the days get warmer. But they also have gorgeous sundresses in a variety of silhouettes for any occasion and spectacular sandals to go along with them. Find the perfect Mother's Day gift or curate your new spring go-tos at jennykane.com. Birthful listeners get 15% off your first order when you use the code BIRTHFUL15 at checkout. That's 15% off your first order at jennykane.com, promo code BIRTHFUL15. Get yourself and the mothers in your life the gift of Jenny Kane. Diaper rash. It can be a truly uncomfortable experience for a baby. And so I find that one of the biggest conundrums when diapering is figuring out what diaper cream to use. So many options are thick and goopy, making them hard to apply and hard to wipe off. But I can personally say that this is not the case for Dr. Mom Butt Balm. Dr. Mom Butt Balm is a pediatrician-approved skin protectant that is free from dyes, preservatives, and zinc oxide, designed as a breathable formula to help maintain an optimal skin barrier while allowing the healing to occur. This butt balm was developed by a mom who is also a doctor, hence the name Dr. Mom Butt Balm, when she couldn't find any traditional products that worked for her baby's persistent diaper rash, and she wasn't about to settle. So she created Dr. Mom Butt Balm to go on smooth and be easy to remove while also being gentle on your baby's delicate skin. With Dr. Mom Butt Balm, you can say goodbye to excessive wiping to clean your little one's already chafed skin. Dr. Mom Butt Balm is so soft and goes on so smooth that you'll only need a small amount instead of having to layer on a thick goop. Plus, it has a lovely minty scent. Learn more about Dr. Mom Butt Balm at drmombuttbalm.com. That's drmombuttbalm.com, or look for it at amazon.com. Welcome to the Birthful Podcast. I'm Adriana Lozada, and today's birth, postpartum, and breastfeeding story is with Vanessa Young. What happens when you plan for a birth center water birth and you end up with a 34-week preemie and an onslaught of breastfeeding obstacles? How does this help you prepare differently for your next birth and postpartum? Vanessa shares her perspective. Stay tuned. The Birthful Podcast, talking to maternity pros and new parents to inform your intuition. Hello, mighty parents and parents-to-be. Thanks again for all the love you give the show. If you like what you hear, then make sure you subscribe so you don't miss a thing. All right, my guest today is Vanessa Young, who has the unique perspective of being a mom to a preemie, followed by a term baby, and is going to share the differences those contrasting experiences made in her emotional postpartum healing and recovery. And I almost want to say that this is also a breastfeeding story, since for her first, she had to overcome So many obstacles, including pumping while she was on an NG tube, using a shield, a tongue and a lip tie that needed fixing twice, and many tears. So how did it all turn out, and did she breastfeed the second time around? Let's find out. Welcome, Vanessa. It's so lovely to have you here on the show.
Thank you, Adriana. I'm so excited to share my story with you.
Yeah, and actually you have two stories that we're going to compare and contrast.
Yes, I'm excited.
Before we do that, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
All right. I am a yoga instructor, a musician. Actually went to school in Rochester, New York, and a mama to two. My son just turned three and my daughter just turned one last week. I'm sort of a part-time, do it on my own a little bit, as my husband is in the U.S. Army field band. So I get to kind of run the house with the kids on my own about half the year while he's gone. So that's, I guess, a little bit about myself. Oh, and I'm doing my doula training right now, partially inspired by you.
Oh, cool.
Thank you.
Oh, yeah. No, how exciting that you're doing a doula training. Yay.
Yeah.
And also shout out to Rochester, New York. How long ago did you leave?
Oh, gosh. let's see. That was about 8 years ago.
Okay.
8, 9 years ago? Yeah.
Did that have, you were studying music at that point here?
Yes, I was. Yep. At Eastman.
Yeah. And which is a fantastic school.
Thank you.
So your husband's a musician too. Did you guys connect here by chance or how did that come about?
We did. Ooh. Yep. We met at Eastman.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
Yeah. So I'm a harpist and he's a French horn player.
How awesome. Oh, I love that. I love that Rochester connection. Not that I'm originally
Thank
from
you.
Here, but have spent enough years to feel definitely second home.
Yeah.
So what was going on with you when you first became pregnant with your son? What were your birth wishes? What were your ideas for the process that was coming?
Yeah. So, let's see, when I got pregnant with him, I was well into my yoga practice and teaching yoga, so I really wanted to have a natural birth. I had actually read some of Ina May's book before even getting pregnant, just because I wanted to engross myself in all of that birthing world and all of that. So that inspired me to research a little bit more on options for me that would be out of hospital birth. And we have a fantastic birth center close by here. So my plan in my mind was to give birth to him at the birth center. And I was hoping for a water birth, if that would work out. However, that did not happen.
Mm-hmm.
So he decided to surprise us 2 days after my baby shower, a few days after I had hit 34 weeks, when my mom and my mother-in-law happened to still be in town for my birth,
baby shower.
The baby shower. Thank you. For my baby shower. And that morning, I got up to go use the bathroom as usual when further along pregnant and sat down and my water broke. So headed in and he was headed into the hospital and he was born 8 hours later.
Oh, wow.
Fairly fast. I had to be put on Pitocin for just a little bit because they weren't quite sure why my water broke. It was clear and everything, but in case it was due to some sort of infection or whatnot, they wanted him out a little bit quicker. So they only needed to give me just a little bit of a boost until my body figured out, oh, okay, we know what's going on, and kicked in full force into active labor. And thankfully, I was still able to have the midwives, with the midwife model of care I was getting at the birth center. They have hospital privileges, so they were still able to be the ones to attend my son's birth. So that was wonderful because I was able to still move around and aside of the Pitocin get that otherwise unmedicated birth I had hoped for, just in the hospital setting instead.
But so I'm guessing that when your water broke, you weren't contractions didn't start right away, and that's why when you went in, they did PIP.
Yeah, they did start, but they were pretty spaced out. They were about 10 minutes apart, and let's see, by the time we got to the hospital, they were spaced or a little bit closer, closer to 5 minutes, but not still definitely more early labor, in terms of discomfort and whatnot with them. But I was, when I got in, I was only 2 centimeters dilated and 100% effaced. So that's why they just gave me that little bit of boost. But it only took, I'm trying to remember how Pitocin is measured. It was like 4, is it like milliliters or whatever that
Oh,
was,
I
the
just say
different numbers?
units. Yeah, I
Units,
just
yeah,
say
whatever
units.
that is. So, yeah, until I was right into the throes of active labor, and my body picked up quite a bit then. And then once he was born, and I did have a side of the surprise. It was still a very empowering birth for me, and I felt amazed at what my body could do, even though it was earlier than expected. And when he was finally born, he sort of cried, but it was a really quiet cry. And he was pretty purple. So they had the whole NICU team. My husband tells me there were quite a few people in the room. I don't remember that when I was actually giving birth because I was so focused and in the moment. But there was the NICU team, ready right across the room with the bed and the heating lamp and everything. So they had to work to help him get breathing a little bit better. And after a bit of time working on him, then I was able to hold him for about, I think it was maybe 15 minutes or so. And then when they were doing, went to weigh him and everything, they noticed he was grunting again. And the nurse did something. I'm not exactly sure what the test was. She was moving his arms out to the side, and that's what gave her the indication, I guess, to call the NICU. And they came back in and whisked him away to the NICU, and I had my husband go with him because I didn't want him to be by himself, and my midwife stayed with me. And that's where we began our journey of just shy of 2 weeks in the NICU with him.
How
So,
big was he at that time?
he was a fairly decent size, although I'm convinced he was a little bit larger because I was on IV fluids, because a lot of that flushed out of his system after the first 24 hours. But when he was born, he was 5 pounds, 12 ounces, and 18 inches long.
Okay, so for 34 weeks, he was a quite decent size.
Yes, yeah, he was. Which I think played to his benefit a little bit, not having to spend even more time in the NICU.
Yeah, I'm sure. And
Yeah.
so, and you wanted to share more about your postpartum stories for this episode. So definitely we needed to do like brushstrokes of the birth because it brings context. But how was this postpartum for you and starting your experience as a mom at the NICU?
It was challenging in the throes of it and the moment. I think it was more just going day by day, hour by hour. And even once we got home and made that transition, it was nice in the fact that we had all of these resources around us to help. So the nurses were amazing. all of the staff in the NICU were great in answering all of our questions, and that helped because I felt it sort of eased me in a little bit, and getting used to caring for an infant and having that support around. And I wasn't able to try breastfeeding him until he was about 5 days old. So having that support of all these lactation consultants around who would check in on us all the time whenever he had his care times and we were trying to figure out breastfeeding, and then being a preemie, he had a little bit of a smaller mouth, so I'd use a nipple shield, and found out later on in postpartum that he had a pretty bad tongue tie and lip tie that actually needed to be corrected twice because it reattached. So having that support around was helpful in easing into postpartum. But later on, about a year, when he turned about a year, was when I realized that I had a lot of postpartum anxiety because of, I think it's mostly because of that surprise start to everything and the extra challenges of navigating having a baby in the NICU and, you know, navigating how to hold a baby who has all the wires and tubes hooked up, and then transitioning home, which was a bit challenging, and being nervous, especially for him, it was a lot of the breathing challenges. So both my husband and I were nervous those first couple of nights, not really sleeping once we brought him home, making sure he was still breathing, because you got so used to having all the machines hooked up where you could see where the what his respiration rate was and how his heart rate and all of that was doing. So without having those sort of monitors to check in, I think that's what set in a lot of the anxiety once home. And having a preemie too, they tend to have, you know, they are not fully developed when they come out. So even though he looked like just a little bit smaller than what some newborns are like, that are term, you know, he didn't have that full immune system. So it was a little isolating for us just because we wanted to make sure that we didn't take him out into enclosed like public places, where he could pick up germs. And that's sort of where I started to notice my anxiety, because I would get really concerned about him potentially getting sick, and my mind would go down that rabbit hole of, okay, he'll get sick and then we have to go back to the hospital and I'll be, you know, separate from him and not able to be near him, and kind of go down that whole train of thought. Which after I started therapy, when he was a year, I was able to kind of learn how to stop that rabbit hole of sort of pulling on that thread to take you down that mental path.
And I was going to ask you, like, what were some of the techniques, or what were some things that were helpful to you to sort of calm down that anxiety? And, you know, both before and after you had therapy, did you have some techniques that you discovered on your own, because you did make it a year through with all this, or was it just getting worse and worse?
You'd think that I'd have a lot being a yoga teacher to draw on. And I did a little bit with trying to focus on breathing a bit, if I would notice that. But I was so absorbed in him and his health that, and he was, we had bouts of a lot of sickness his first year. We had about 6 ER visits in that first year with him. And so I felt like every time he got sick, I think that kind of amplified my anxiety until I went to see therapy. So I think to answer your question, it got a little bit worse as the year went on until I finally went ahead and agreed with what my husband had seen along and tried to encourage me along to go to therapy and seek out that extra little bit of support and help. And then once in the therapy, what really helped was breathing. So kind of drawing on my yoga practice and starting a daily meditation practice, my therapist encouraged stopping when I would notice those thoughts, which it took a while to start to notice that my mind was going down that path. And then once I would notice it, trying to stop it earlier and earlier along that path and take a few moments to breathe and sort of set in my mind, you know, even just 10 seconds to breathe and bring myself back to here and remind myself he's healthy, he's okay, I'm okay, and sort of reground myself in the present.
And I am going to ask you more questions about all that, but we need to take a break.
Sure.
We'll be right back. In our house, we are big on hydrating. Aside from all the important health benefits, I find that if I'm not well hydrated, I get these brutal headaches. So it's really important for me to hydrate. However, I do not like the taste of tap water, and I cannot bring myself to buy bottled water because of all the plastic waste. So for years, we did pitcher filters, but then we switched to AquaTrue water purifiers, and after tasting the deliciousness of their truly clean water, we are never going back. What makes AquaTrue so unique is that they use a 4-stage reverse osmosis purification process. This process removes 15% more contaminants than ordinary pitcher filters and is specifically designed to combat chemicals like PFAS, also known as forever chemicals, that are found in almost 45% of U.S. tap water. You can also forget about having to change filters every 2 to 3 months because AquaTrue filters last from 6 months to 2 years. Now, if plastic bottles are your thing, just one set of filters from AquaTrue's classic purifier makes the equivalent of 4,500 bottles of water. AquaTrue comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee and even makes a great gift. Today, my listeners receive 20% off any AquaTrue purifier. Just go to AquaTrue.com. That's AquaTrue.com and enter the code BIRTHFUL at checkout. That's 20% off any AquaTrue water purifier when you go to AquaTrue.com and use the promo code BIRTHFUL. And we are back talking with Vanessa Young about her postpartum stories. And right now we're focusing on your first one. And so, yeah, I was like, it was as you were talking, you were already answering questions that I had. Like, for example, that correlation between him getting sick and having ER visits and your anxiety growing. Because it was, it didn't seem... So from what you told us, it didn't seem like the actual birth had much trauma to it, but maybe that the postpartum experience as it went on through that year had a lot of micro situations that did you feel that they were building and building?
Yes. Yeah, I did. And then my therapist had me walk all the way through from the beginning of his pregnancy through that entire first year. And I actually realized that there were parts of his birth story after he was born, not the actual labor and birth, but after he was born, that I actually had blocked out of my memory in some ways that we had to kind of unlock because it was just too emotionally charged for me to remember. So I didn't, for that first year, I couldn't remember when he went off to the NICU, like when they took him away. And because that was really emotional for me to be separated from my baby. So yeah. And then I felt like each sort of episode that he had health-wise that first year, just kind of built on the last one until it peaked at that year. And what peaked at that year for me also was that I started having some health issues. So when he was about one, I had a month of pneumonia and then followed by a month of shingles that broke out. So my body was taking on that stress. And that's kind of what woke me up to realize, okay, I need to figure out a way to get this anxiety out in a healthy way so my body is not taking it in and taking it out through kind of breaking down in a way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, stressing out your nervous system and then having that
right.
create bigger responses like the pneumonia and the shingles.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. So, exactly. And thank you for sharing that, that, you know, you did mention that it's still, that it is, I'm guessing it's still, that it is emotionally charged of when he went off to the NICU.
Mm-hmm.
Was, you mentioned the fact that while you were in the NICU, you were looking at the monitors and having all those, and that I have heard before that it is very reassuring for people in the NICU to have those external elements confirming that baby is okay, and mm-hmm. that when going home, you know, it makes it harder to trust that. What did you guys do any techniques to try to like reassure yourselves that he was good, or did anybody give you any suggestions on how to do that? Was that addressed at all during your quote unquote release from the hospital?
Yeah. It was a little bit. I think it was more in the partnership with our pediatrician, just reassuring that we could bring him in to check his weight whenever we needed to, because that was something we wanted to make sure he was gaining weight properly. The other thing for us was just, you know, learning how to count those respiration rates when he was home. So being able to watch and notice and see like what we needed to look for if he was having some distress. So that helped to know those signs and be able to see that if that happened, which it did a couple times when he got sick, which is why we knew he was having a harder time breathing. And then the other one for us, for his specific story, the last thing that he needed to be able to graduate out of the NICU was to be able to hold his core temperature, which is really common for preemies because they don't have all that extra fat on them. So part of his care that they would do every 3 hours was checking his temperature and learning how to do that underneath his arm. So that was reassuring for us too. When we came home, we just kind of continued that for the first couple days to sort of check his temperature and check in and have those, those little reassuring things that we had from the NICU.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's awesome. And you did mention that breastfeeding was a struggle. Can you walk us through a little bit more?
Sure. So as I mentioned, I wasn't able to even attempt to breastfeed him until he was 5 days old.
Why was that?
Which is because he had a feeding tube in and he had the nasal the oxygen mm-hmm. in. And so they wanted that to be... They wanted him to be a little bit more stabilized with the breathing and whatnot and get used to that before trying to get him used to the breast. And also part of it was we did try, I think he was maybe 3 or 4 days old, and they wanted just that skin to skin. They call it kangaroo care, where you put them skin to skin, kind of tucked in, nuzzled in, like between your breasts. And so we would do that to, I would be completely topless and have like a blanket over him and have him nuzzled in to see if he would start to root and show any interest. But because he was working so hard to breathe and to kind of keep his temperature up, he'd end up just falling asleep on me. So that was part of it. It wasn't until that 5th day that he started to kind of gain that strength to move his head over and show interest in trying to root and latch. And then once we were able to, it was hard for him to get his little mouth around my breast to get a nice latch in just because he had a smaller mouth. And thankfully, there was one amazing nurse one of the evenings we were there who noticed, I think she might have noticed that he had a little bit of a lip tie and tongue tie. And so she suggested the shield, which helped significantly to give him a little extra help to be able to latch. Since he had the smaller mouth. During this whole time, I was pumping and able to make enough milk to have him get the milk through a bottle or through the feeding tube for the first couple days. So that was that. And then by the time we left the NICU, he was pretty much exclusively breastfeeding, but we needed to supplement I'm trying to remember. I think it was twice a day we need to supplement him with bottles of my breast milk mixed with a formula that had some extra calories and things to sort of help him gain weight. So, and that we only needed to do for a month. But then after I was having a lot of pain with trying to breastfeed him, even with the shield, the birthing center has two amazing lactation consultants, and I went in one of the days that they have this latch check where you can go in for 10 minutes and or a little longer, and they just check the baby's latch. And she was the one that identified that he had a pretty significant tongue tie and got us connected with the doctor who went ahead and lasered that. And then when things weren't still progressing, the doctor noticed that it had started to reattach and noticed that he also had his upper lip tie. And then once those were released, then things started to get easier. It still took about a week for it to start to become bearable and then maybe another week or so to become comfortable and start to wean him off of the shield. So that was, by that point, I was about 10 weeks postpartum with him. So, and we maintained a breastfeeding relationship into my second pregnancy for a total of 19 months. So that was great.
Yeah.
It just took a lot of perseverance and creativity, and we made it work.
Yeah, and for those who don't, a lot of people are not familiar with what a tongue tie release or a lip tie release involves. Can you explain a little bit of the procedure and also what you need to do, this concept of it reattaching, like what's that about? Because I know you have to do, and I'm doing air quotes now, exercises to keep it.
Yes.
Yeah, can you walk us through that a little bit?
Sure. And actually, one of the links that I sent you, I'll mention too, has a great resource for that with pictures and everything. But the tongue tie is essentially towards the tip of the tongue, like underneath the tongue. There's like an attachment that attaches the tongue to the lower portion of the mouth. I don't know all the technical terms. And for a tongue tie, it usually means that that part is quite a bit further towards, more towards the tip of the tongue or right underneath the tip of the tongue. So in order to get a good latch for a baby, you know, they need to use their tongue to draw the nipple in and draw the milk out. So if there's a tongue tie, the baby can't get their tongue really even past their bottom lip to be able to get the milk out and to get a really deep latch. And then the same thing with the lip tie, there's this small piece that attaches from the inside of the lip to basically between the front two teeth. Both there's the bottom and the top. I believe it's most common that if there's a bad tongue tie, that it's the top lip that is tied usually. But like for my son, he had it right inside the upper lip, and you could see it attached as low as it could get between where the front two teeth would be. And the way to test that is you kind of roll the top lip back, and it should be able to get up close to the nose, but if it can't, it's usually tied a bit there. So that's sort of what it is. And then the reattachment thing, and what we didn't realize the first time, so they use a laser to release that tie. It's more painful for the mom or the parents, I think, than for the baby. They cry for a few seconds, and then, you know, you get them to latch, and there's a little bit of blood, but pretty much as soon as they latch, they, you know, they nurse and then they fall asleep. So it's a little bit more traumatic for me to watch than for him to experience, I think. But the exercises are with the tongue. We didn't do it with the lip tie, but with the tongue, you sort of lift the tongue and like press it back so it doesn't reattach down, or put a little bit of pressure on it. And the babies don't like it. So they do cry quite a bit and fuss a bit, but it's a nice way to make sure that it, or not so nice for them, but it's a way to ensure that it doesn't reattach.
Right, because that wound's open there,
right,
underneath the tongue, and like both edges naturally go back to each other. So you've got to keep not letting it heal together.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
And the resource that the lactation consultant gave me was breastfeedingusa.org. There's a great article, and it goes through how to do those exercises.
Fantastic. I will link to that on the show notes. And let's take our second break. We'll be right back to jump into more of your story. We'll be right back.
All right.
Today's episode is sponsored by Acorns, and sometimes I find that investing gets put off because it doesn't seem urgent, or because with our busy lives, we may not have the time to research and manage said investments, which is why I so appreciate that Acorns makes it easy to start automatically saving and investing for your future, and that you don't need a lot of money or expertise to invest with Acorns. In fact, you can get started with just your spare change. So, for example, I take advantage of Acorns' roundup feature, where they round up the purchase amounts I make in my linked account to the nearest dollar, and then they automatically transfer that to my invest account portfolio. Also, Acorns can recommend an expert-built portfolio that fits you and your money goals, then automatically invests your money for you. For me, that's easy peasy investing. Head to acorns.com/birthful or download the Acorns app to start saving and investing for your future today. Client testimonial may not be representative of all clients. Tier 1 compensation provided. Compensation provides an incentive to positively promote Acorns. View important disclosures at acorns.com/birthful. Investing involves risk, including loss of principal. Please consider your objectives, risk tolerance, and Acorns fees before investing. Acorns Advisors LLC Acorns is an SEC-registered investment advisor. Brokerage services are provided to clients of Acorns by Acorns Securities LLC. Member FINRA, SIPC. For more information, visit acorns.com.
And we're back talking with Vanessa about her postpartum experiences. So this one, you know, you had, other than it being at 34 weeks, it was a relatively smooth birth, but then, you know, rocky postpartum specifically, or mostly because you had a preemie, and all that involves, which is, you know, considering at 34 weeks how early that is. He wasn't so small, so I can definitely appreciate what you were saying about him, you know, that worked in his benefit. So then let's fast forward. Words are hard. Fast forward to a couple years later, you're pregnant again with your second child. What were your feelings then towards birth wishes and things that you were on the lookout for?
So I really wanted, even more so, to finally get that birth center birth that I had wanted the first time. But my main goal was to get past that 34 weeks and to hopefully get a term baby. But I really wanted to have that birth center birth and hopefully that water birth, which I didn't end up with a water birth, but I was able to give birth at the birth center. So around 16 weeks with my daughter, I started the progesterone shots, P17 shots for 20 weeks, which there's been research that shows that it for mothers who have had premature birth, especially if water broke or contractions started, preterm labor began without really a known cause, this shot helped to, for some women or quite a bit of women, get them to term the next time around. And that
Right,
was
because
like,
they never, no, they couldn't figure out why your baby was premature first time around.
right. And there was no sign. They checked for infection, and I know they took the placenta off to pathology. He had a nice big placenta, and took that off, and they couldn't find any reason as to, there was no infection. They found no reason as to why my water broke early. So I was a perfect candidate for the shots. And although they were literally a pain in the butt
No.
each week, it was well worth it because it helped me to keep my daughter into exactly 38 weeks. So the shots finished at 36 weeks, and towards the end of those last few weeks of getting the shots, actually the days leading up to them, I would start seeing signs that my body was wanting to go into labor a little bit. So I even had around that last shot that I had the night before, I was even up for a couple hours in the middle of the night with pretty intense Braxton Hicks, I'm guessing it was, that would come down to even a couple minutes apart, and it would be lasting for a couple hours. And my body would be clearing itself out and kind of all that fun stuff that happens in the early stages of labor. But then I got my shot and my body and system would kind of chill out,
So
which
you
was
think that
interesting.
the like you were kind of experiencing that the shots were indeed keeping you from otherwise going into labor?
Yes,
Okay.
yeah. So, which is why I expected once I hit 37 weeks that she would just show up. So that didn't happen. I think I was able to relax. And I was still going to therapy throughout the pregnancy just to help because obviously there was anxiety throughout leading up to that 34 weeks. And, each subsequent week after that. So 37 weeks, I think I was able to finally kind of relax a little bit and enjoy that last week of pregnancy, because I wasn't afraid of her coming and I reached that threshold that I needed to be at to be able to give birth at the birth center. And then kind of fast forwarding. So I had some prenatal labor with her starting a couple days before her birth. So I lost a good chunk of my mucus plug that Thursday before she was born. And then Friday throughout the day, I would have a few hours of sort of contractions, 10 to 15 minutes apart, and then they would just stop. And then the Saturday before she was born, I thought that my water broke and was in conversation with midwives. And then that night, we thought for sure I was going into labor because I started having contractions 5 minutes apart from one another. And we actually took my son to a friend's house where he was going to stay, went back home to keep laboring. And then we ended up waking up the next day after falling asleep finally. So everything stopped again. So I went in that Sunday, to see the midwife who was on call, then to just double check and do a quick internal exam, make sure that it wasn't my water, which it wasn't, that had broken. And then later that day, I had some bloody show, and again, my body was clearing itself out, so I was running to the bathroom quite a bit. And I think I needed to have my son settled for the night before my body was like, okay, we're doing this. I remember my husband gave him his bath before bedtime, and I had this need to put clean sheets on our bed and clean sheets, get the bassinet next to our bed all set up, and double check our bags that we had packed for the birth center and put them near the door.
Some good nesting, last minute, everything ready.
Right. And I was able to, we put our son down, put Tristram down for the night together. It was like a nice last little family kind of bonding moment as a family of three. And I went out on my evening walk. Once I hit 37 weeks, I was anxious to get into more activity and walking since I was so nervous about going into labor prior to that point. So I would walk every night around the neighborhood. So I went out for my evening walk, and I was in denial that I was having to stop frequently throughout that walk. And I sort of knew in many ways that it was the last walk I was having with my daughter. And shortly before getting to the house, I actually put my hands on the belly and thanked her for this last walk and time that we had. And then I went and did my evening meditation and got a little annoyed that I seemed to be jolted out of it multiple times in that 20-minute meditation, and decided afterwards, instead of doing laundry as I was planning to do, to sit down and watch a movie. And now I will always think of her when I watch How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days, because that's what I picked on Netflix, which kind of fits their personality in many ways.
I can't, I'm fast forwarding to the future in my mind. I can't wait for the moment that you guys can watch it together and you can say, yes, this is the movie I was watching.
Yes. I know, I had to watch it this year right before she turned a year. The night before when she would have been born. So I got on my birthing ball and I was trying to watch the movie and get annoyed that I couldn't fully focus on it. And I had to get up and use the bathroom again. And then I realized, oh, I'm having contractions and my body's clearing itself out. Maybe I should time this. So from that point to really moving from the bathroom back to the room where I was watching the movie and getting on my birth ball, my contractions within that span of time went from 7 minutes to 5 minutes to 3 minutes. So I thought, I better let my husband know. And I've never seen him move so fast up the stairs before when he saw me having to lean against the wall to get through a contraction. So I still told him, I figured that we had a lot of time left, but he convinced me to call Melissa, the midwife, on call. So I called her, and it just took one contraction for her to hear me go through it and say, okay, let's, think about meeting at the birth center in an hour. And again, I thought I had more time, so I said, well, how about an hour and 15 minutes, because we still had to pack up my son, take him to our friend's house, and then from their house it was another 15 minutes or so to the birth center. And I had also let my friend know who is coming to help support me during labor as well. So after we got off the phone, then my husband kind of nervously got him packed, who miraculously slept the whole time in the car and transitioned easily to our friend's house. But kind of the funny part with that was, once we got in the car, we were trying to get a hold of, we had a list of people who would watch our son for us while we were at the birth center. And we called our first friend, and she didn't answer her phone, which made us a little nervous. And she still, to this day, has the voicemail I left her. That was very clearly I was in active labor. And then we finally got a hold of it, took like the third person on our list, who was able to watch him. So we quickly got to, well, it didn't feel quickly for me, to our friend's house, dropped him off, and then got to the birth center where we met Melissa, and she checked me, and I was 4 centimeters and fully effaced. And as she was pulling her hand out, my water broke in lovely fashion all over her. And she was like, I didn't do that, which I knew she didn't. It was just a funny moment. And my friend showed up and arrived, and this was going to be her first time seen a live birth, which she had always wanted to see. And so she was really excited and super helpful, and helped my husband get my playlist all set up. And while they were filling up the birthing pool, I was just birthing over the, or laboring over the birthing ball, and on hands and knees, or in the bathroom. All those, for me, I guess my baby's just, I like to be on all fours. I don't like to be on my back, or sitting on the toilet. That also was comfortable for me. But the water was wonderful once I got in and labored for a while, in the water, you know, kind of vocalizing through all of the contractions. And my husband's always an amazing support for me. Although this time he was trying to use a lot of the same verbal encouragement and support that he used during our son Tristram's birth. And I actually looked up at him once and I was like, I need you to be quiet and just shut up, because I need to get in my zone, which kind of surprised me this time around. And then which I hadn't felt with my son, I started to feel the urge to push with my daughter. Even though later on I realized I wasn't quite fully dilated. I was about maybe 8 centimeters or so at that point. So I was trying to push with her, and I think I was getting a little frustrated with my body, because in vocalizing and everything, I started saying, I want her out, get her out. Even though I love my daughter dearly, that's just what came out of my mouth. So my midwife asked if, since I was pretty stretchy, if I wanted her to try to stretch me. But in order to do that, I would need to get out of the tub or out of the birthing pool. So somehow I mustered up the strength to get out of the birthing pool between contractions that were coming quite quickly this time. And the second I got out of the water, I felt everything intensify a lot more. And then after that, she tried to stretch me, and I just said, don't touch me. It was too uncomfortable. And I just labored a little bit more on hands and knees on the bed. And then I laid down on my side and things sort of stopped for a second. It's like that lull before the pushing, real pushing stage. And my midwife, this is my favorite part of my daughter's birth, she asked me if there was anything I was holding on to. And without skipping a beat, I told her I was worried that there wouldn't be enough love for both my son and her. And as a mama of three, my midwife assured me that there was more than enough love. There was quite an abundance of love. And literally within another minute or so, I flipped onto my hands and knees, pushed, and it was about 5 or 10 minutes later she was born. So in total, it was pretty fast. It was 4 hours from start to finish. And yeah, then, you know, it was amazing because I was on hands and knees, but I was able to catch her. And my midwife kind of helped me catch her, and she had quite a short umbilical cord, so I awkwardly had to get her up to my belly because she wouldn't get further beyond that. But just being able to have her connected to me and bring her right to my body, which I didn't get with my son, was one of the most healing things for me. And her birth, both my husband and I describe as really being quite healing for us. So yeah, that was, I birthed the placenta. We got to let her cord, delayed cord clamping, and got to feel her cord as it pulsed the last bit of blood to her, which was really amazing to feel that. We were both shocked to find that her placenta was quite a bit smaller than my son's, which was fascinating considering he was a preemie and she was a term baby. And I was able to hold her and snuggle her close for a good, I think it was hour or two, before I had to pass her off. And my midwife, stitched me up. I needed a couple stitches. And then I felt like I wanted to get up and take a shower. So then my husband got to hold her, which was really special for me to see and for him, because he wasn't able to hold our son until he was a couple days old. So to get to hold her right away was really special. And the other healing part then was being able to take her home 5 hours after giving birth. And we both kept saying, like, you mean we get to actually bring her home with us right away? So yeah, that was really, really special. And I immediately realized after she was born that there was more than enough love for both my son and her. And I was so excited and just kept saying I couldn't wait for Tristram to meet Oriana and to get to meet his little sister. So, and that was really special once my husband went to go pick him up and Ori and I were snuggled in our bed at home, which was amazing to be able to just have the comforts of home and postpartum healing. And then that first day, we just kind of spent the day, all four of us, snuggling in bed, which was amazing. Yeah.
That's such a lovely story. I was the whole time, I'm like, I'm not going to interrupt her. I'm not going to interrupt her. She's, oh, this is so wonderful.
Thank you.
Yeah. And, you know, there's so much contrast even from you telling it. Like the way you told me your son's story earlier compared to the amount of detail that you added to your daughter's story.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So I really, I'm happy for you that you were able to, not that his story was bad. It was just.
Right.
Right. But that you were able to have this story and put some healing into context.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, that's how we felt.
Mm-hmm. And so looking back though, I want to ask you, because this one was so filled of happiness, and I'm trying to figure out if it was that you were just starting to tell the story and were minding the time or something. Were there, if you were to tell me one beautiful, good thing that you remember from your son's story, do you have that?
Yes. Yeah. So the beautiful thing for him, and I did have this with both of their labors, but since he was first, that was my first experience with that. For me, I dropped really deep internally, as my husband explains it, witnessing it. He said, you like weren't even there. You were in a totally different world. And what was really special for me was that, and this might sound a little cheesy, I guess, or hippie of me, but I have, our family has a a place on a lake that it grew up going to, that the lake actually was named after my grandmother, who I was very close to, who my daughter has, her name is her middle name. And during my labors, I went there. That was where I labored. I labored on the lake, and I felt my grandmother with me. Like, I actually felt her holding my hand through each contraction and getting me through each wave and focusing on the water on the lake as I saw each wave. And so having that feeling and that presence of being surrounded of the women in my family who gave birth before me, present in my birth, was what really stuck out to me, and what I think made my birth with my son so empowering in many ways, if that makes sense.
It does. And I don't think it's cheesy at all, because imagery is huge, right? And the sense of comfort and family is huge. So however, whatever gives you that, and who's to say, like, we're not judging you. You can imagine what you can be wherever you want. Go deep. And the fact that you do go into altered states, this labor land concept, when you're giving birth, that is required for you to go to deeper brain waves and get out of your thinking brain so that birth can happen with this primal body. You know, you obviously are really good at it. And as your husband says, you're not even there. Like, you go deep into that consciousness. So, which isn't to say that you're not present. I always clarify that, because it's not like you're gone in a trance. You're you're like in both places at the same time.
Exactly. Yeah, you're fully aware of what everyone's saying around you. But you're also in this other place mentally.
Yeah. And how lovely to have the presence of your grandmother during those times that are so important to you.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought that was very special. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. There's no cheesiness here. It's we'll leave the cool at the door for a second. Too cool for school thing. Yeah, thank you for sharing that, because I was like, I can see such a contrast from her, and I don't think that her son's experience was bad. I think we missed something. So I'm glad I brought it back.
Yeah, thank you for that. I really appreciate that. Yeah, because his birth was just as special too. They both were in different ways.
Yeah. So how did this postpartum, I'm sure it's night and day of having a full-term baby that you took right home as opposed to having a preemie in the NICU, you know, and doing kangaroo care. Yeah, tell me more.
So postpartum-wise, I felt immediately postpartum, I felt more energized the second time around. And the fact that I felt that I could get up and take a shower just a few hours after giving birth. I remember with my son, I think just the emotional aspect of it was kind of drawing me down. And it took me a day and a half to work up the energy to take a shower after he was born. But with her, I was like ready to take a shower and jump back into taking care of myself. And the biggest difference too was I had her placenta encapsulated because I really wanted to do that this time around and see if that helped, especially given my postpartum anxiety, and see if that would help that at all. And I felt like it did. It was amazing to watch the process of having her placenta be encapsulated because the woman who did it came to our house and set it all up and was very patient with the million questions I was asking her about it, because I find placentas fascinating. But I found that gave me a lot of energy and helped my mood and also helped my milk to come in. And it also, I was able to, she latched, I think it was maybe an hour after being born, and had a beautiful latch, no lip tie or tongue tie. And I'm still breastfeeding her now, after a year. And she is loves her milk and really great with that. The challenge with hers wasn't necessarily emotionally, and I put a lot of things in place, so I knew there was a chance that I would need to get into therapy after her birth. So I had, before she was born, scheduled an appointment at a point where I knew like she'd definitely be born at that point. So it was about a month out from when she was actually born. And that helped a lot because for me, the postpartum anxiety, the second time around, it did come back to the surface, but it didn't really show up until about 2 months in. And I think being proactive with having all that support in place was very helpful this time. For me, it was more physically recovering from her birth because it's a lot different giving birth to a full-term baby and full-term baby's head than it is a preemie. And she was a pound more than my son. So she was 6 pounds, 14 ounces, and 2 inches longer at 20 inches long. So with that, I had a few more stitches than I had had with him. And I also bled a lot more with her. And had some pretty sizable clots the first week of postpartum with her, which was a little unnerving since I didn't have that with my son. But I came to realize as I progressed through the initial postpartum period with her that my bleeding was a sign of how far I was pushing myself. So even though I felt great, and felt like I could get back into chasing my son around and, getting out and going for walks and such, my body definitely responded anytime I took it a little too far and I'd start bleeding again. So, I had those reminders to slow down and, enjoy some more snuggles in bed instead of trying to get out and about and go back to day-to-day life. But it was a much easier transition, I felt like, than it had been with him. Although she is our fiery little one and was had that, I think it's called the witching hour each night, and that started around 3 weeks postpartum, where she would just scream for a couple hours. And that was really trying. And that started around the time that my husband left for 2 weeks for a 2 week tour. So, thankfully, I had put in place to have family out during that whole time so that I'd have a ton of support. And my aunt and my mom made a bunch of food that I had in the freezer while they were here, which was helpful. And each night we would just take turns passing around Oriana to see who would have the trick to calm her down. So one thing that helped with that was I had a friend who suggested making a list of the things that helped calm her down because it would be hit or miss each night. So we had a growing list of things like, bouncing on the birthing ball while holding her, or sometimes she liked having her butt patted or her back rubbed or held a certain way, or, nursed at a certain time. So all of that helped to start to narrow down the amount of time that she would be fussy in the evening. And that finally fizzled out when she was about maybe 10 or 11 weeks old. So, yeah, but it was emotionally a lot easier this time around.
Well, and it's great that you, I mean, obviously you did so much preparation and were on top of it and knowing more what to expect. And the fact that even though she had this witching hour lasting, so, every night, however many hours from 3 weeks, once she was 3 weeks, to around 10 to 11 weeks, and that you had the foresight of knowing that your husband was going to go away, and you set in place support for that time, meant that you weren't doing this all on your own, and literally on your own, right? Not just with your husband, but literally on your own, having two kids. So yeah, good for you for setting that up and trying to figure out what you could make work.
Thank you. And the other thing I want to mention too, real quick, that I found super helpful the second time around was that I put together, before my daughter was born, these little kits. So I had one in the bathroom full of all of like my postpartum supplies that I needed. So it was all set and had my sitz bath all ready to go. And then in our kind of den area, I had a little bin of activities for my son, like sticker books and crayons and stuff that would keep him busy while I was, you know, breastfeeding for long periods of time in those newborn days. And I also had like a little breastfeeding, I guess, kit, you could say, set up. So I had this bin with like nipple cream and a nice big water bottle and snacks and a, you know, quick charger for my phone, and all those things that I needed to have right there at my fingertips. And I felt like having all that in place before she was born was really helpful.
Yeah, not having to go look for that. Oh, I love that idea of your breastfeeding nook and your perineum bathroom nook.
Yes.
And your son entertainment kit. Because I was also going to ask you, like, how did the transition feel going from one child to two children?
In some ways it was easier, in some ways it was harder. I felt like initially it was much easier. Just the stage and age that my son was, he was just a month over turning two. And so he loves babies even to this day. And he was so excited and really loving her. He always wanted to hold her, which was really, you know, made my heart melt every time and still does to this day. But that really helped. And, the transition was nice too, because ever since my son was born, up until that point, he had been really attached to mama, really attached to me. And what was really nice in the transition and special to see was watching his bond with daddy, my husband, change. And they had their special bonding moments where my husband would take him out, and, you know, they went to a baseball game when Ori was about 2 weeks old. And just having that time, the two of them, was really special, and I think helped ease the transition because it gave them that time, and then it gave me time to heal and time to bond with Oriana too and kind of get to know her. But it's a lot more it was a lot more whirlwind in some ways, just trying to figure out the balance. And I feel like I'm still to this day figuring out the balance between both kids and making sure that I had enough, was giving enough attention and time to each one individually as well as together as siblings. So taking that time when my daughter would be napping and sleeping to get down on the floor and play with my son, or read him some books and snuggle him. And then making sure too that I had time where I was getting to know my new baby, and bonding with her. So,
Yeah. And that's such a great point. I often recommend that, of making sure you set out some alone time with your older kid, that it's only you and them, so that they can, you know, have the comfort and expectation and knowing that that's coming, and knowing that they're going to have their, you know, you guys are going to have your time together, so that there's less of that regression and jealousy and all those things, just making the transition easier. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. One thing I did with that too was I took my son out when it was about almost 2 weeks or like a week and a half in, and I just took him out to go get a donut where he loved to go, and to see how happy he was that he got me all to himself, even though it was just, you know, down the street for maybe 20 minutes. He was so happy for a good few days after that, having that time.
Yeah. No, and it's good for you too to have like a little space with him. And I truly appreciate, as you were saying, that during that postpartum period that you were able to set out some time focus on taking care of, and I thought you were going to say baby, and you went taking care of myself, and I was like, yes, yes.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. It was, I think I waited too long to do that after my son's birth. So, that was something also that I set up. As soon as she was born, I contacted my acupuncturist and set up, a time to see her, you know, I think it was a week after she was born, and set up at 5 weeks with my chiropractor, just to get an adjustment before, that 6 weeks time was up, to get everything back in place after giving birth, and, you know, trying to get out, which was still hard, but a little bit easier than after my son, when my husband would literally have to push me out the door to say, no, go take, you know, even 15 minutes to go for a walk by yourself or do something for you. But it's important, because, you know, they need me to be at my fullest, to be the best mom that I can be. And so I've learned through both of their births and postpartum that it's important I take that time away so that I can be fully present when I am with them, and be that best mom in that moment for them.
So huge. Yes, I agree 1,000,000% with that. And I also, one of the things that you mentioned, I was like, absolutely, is having that internal gauge of your blood, your lochia, your period afterwards, telling you, hey, you're overdoing it. I always say that is a literal red flag telling you, you gotta slow down, go back too much. So knowing that and being aware of it and responding to it is great.
Yeah. Thank you.
Vanessa, is there anything else that you wanted to make sure that we talked about, or that you wanted to let the listeners know?
Nothing I can think of, other than just, you know, really tune into your intuition, because usually it's right. as a mom and as a woman that's, you know, going with that gut feeling, both in pregnancy, birth, and motherhood goes a long way.
And you know your body, your baby, yourself, yes, more than anybody else. So, right. Yeah.
And more than the internet, too. Which is important.
Yes. So much more. Thank you so much for being on the show today. This has been delightful.
Oh, thank you so much, Adriana. It's been a real joy to share my stories with you.
Mighty ones, check out the in-depth show notes for this episode at birthful.com, where you can see pictures of Vanessa and also learn more about me, the show, Patreon member benefits, send me messages, and more. This episode was produced by me and made possible by you. The title song for this podcast is Vives by Kevin McLeod, and the sponsorship song is Air Hockey Saloon by Chris Zabriskie. Find them both at freemusicarchive.org. Also, the Birthful podcast is part of the Parents on Demand Network, a network of podcasts focused on parents. Download the free Parents on Demand app for Apple and Android for easy on-the-go listening. I'm Adriana Losada. Please join me Wednesday when I'll be talking to a new birth professional to inform your intuition here at the Birthful podcast. Thanks so much for listening.